Hello and welcome to Comic Connoisseurs. Today we'll be talking about our favorite character origins and the retcons that have changed them, how we feel about them, and where we think they should be going. Of course, I'm my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Good evening.
Also is Red Ink.
What's up?
All right, so this is a topic that JT has suggested. So JT, that puts a spotlight on you. Name a character origin that is your favorite origin for this character and talk about the retcons that are involved with it that have modified it.
Well, one of my favorite characters, and I think goes without saying that almost everyone loves this character, is Batman. And it's always it's a very basic formula, movie theater, loving parents, cowardly criminal, eternal life warring on or eternal war on crime. And when you look at the original, like it's just, bang, and Bruce Wayne goes off, becomes a paragon of physicality, becomes the smartest man in the world, and it's a very basic origin when you look at the Golden Age one. You get the updates throughout the years. Now, one retcon to the origin that I've enjoyed, although I agree it doesn't really work and it sours the milk, is Batman 89, where you have Jack Napier, the Joker, be the one to kill Thomas and Martha Wayne. I mean, stuff like that, it makes the story interesting, and it certainly makes it more interesting going forward, but ultimately it just you couldn't let it go, Tim. Specifically, I've always liked some of the elements that they've introduced into the Batman origin with the new 52. It gets a little more into what Bruce actually did to set up Batman and how he established the legend of the Batman going forward. And the best, and I will say worst place they did this is in the massive Year Zero storyline that they did for the better part of a year, where it's set in Bruce Wayne comes back to Gotham after his years abroad, but he goes about and how he went about setting up Batman's tech and his, modus operandi in Gotham City. And you get stuff like, I forget what they named the uncle. I think it was Uncle Philip, which is something they've had in Bruce Wayne's backstory over the years, that he's had like one or two relatives that came in to look after Bruce after his parents were killed. But they had introduced stuff like they have this brownstone that Bruce buys in Crime Alley or near Crime Alley. That's going to be his headquarters before, the Joker, sorry, not the Joker, the Red Hood gang blows it up. His uncle becomes a part of it. They introduced the idea that Edward Nygma used to work for Wayne Enterprises, and that's where he got access to all this tech that he goes around to commit his various crimes. And that's kind of it. I mean, with Batman, it's you can only add so much or take away things or change things in terms of retcons. And there have been really dumb things over the years, like have one of his trainers turn out to be Lady Shiva, or you have stuff, and you guys might have to remind me here, there was a French manhunter detective that became very prevalent in the Batman comics, specifically the Robin comics, like in the Tim Drake origin in the 90s.
Ducard?
That's it. Oh, why couldn't I remember it? Like they used that at the beginning of Batman Begins when he fir where Bruce first meets, Ducard, who turns out to be Ra's al Ghul. Ra's al Ghul, I can never remember what the proper pronunciation on that is. So, I mean, that's what I like about Batman. Another thing, another character tied to Batman that they retconned his origin. And when they retcon, it's not so much they retconned the origin as they canonized a DC Elseworlds tale, and that's Damian. We spent a large part of our last episode talking about how much of a dick Damian is.
Well,
Well, sorry, Red?
that's not the first Elseworlds tale that they canonized. They canonized The Killing Joke, which was an Elseworlds tale.
Yeah. Well, I think they canonized that after, or no, I'm not even sure. So, But what I'm speaking about with Damien, there is Son of the Demon, which was at first for many years thought to be this this tale. It was not part of the main continuity. Bruce Wayne is drugged by Talia. They have a reckless night of passion, and at the end of this thing, this baby is left in an orphanage, clutching her necklace, and it's like, Batman has a son. Oh, they'll never use this and do that in the comics until Grant Morrison started writing Batman in the early aughts,
Well,
early mid aughts.
to be fair, there was another Bruce and Talia child that showed up even earlier than that, in the Mark Waid's Kingdom Come. I'm talking about Ibn of Zafusha, or literally in Arabic, Son of the Bat.
I'm good with just calling him Ibn,
Yes.
because I just, as you mentioned that, I remember that. I was like, oh God, I'm not even going to try and pronounce his full name.
Didn't they
So I mean
retcon
that
that to be Damien?
it
Nobody
one of
really, nobody really touched, nobody really touched Kingdom Come other than the Kingdom, in a couple of appearances of the Kingdom Come Superman and Batman in the Convergence. After that, they pretty much went hands off, and they pretty much pretended that he doesn't exist.
Well, I
Yeah,
mean,
what
Kingdom
they.
Come Super. So you go, Red.
They show Batman in the future, like they always have, like once in a while. Oh, this is what's going to happen to Damien, and it shows him wearing the same costume.
Ibn didn't wear a costume. He just wore a black. He just wore a suit and tie.
Thought he
And
wore like
no.
all this kind of black Batman costume with a brown coat kind of thing.
No.
Okay, the what you're thinking about, and I can clear this up, guys, is. When we first see Ibn in Kingdom Come, the Kingdom, he has a slick suit, but he also has like this very, Ra's al Ghul style cloak. And then in the more modern context where you see the future and Damian has become Batman, that style is aped where, he's got the cowl and the Bat logo shirt, but he's wearing this almost a duster looking trench coat, which is usually drawn very much to look like the cloak he had in Kingdom Come. So, but yeah, like I said, Batman, I mean, they've retconned so many different elements over the years of his thing. It's, I just look at the things that I like. Like I said, the New 52, by and large, I don't love it, but there's a lot of stuff in there that I think is unfairly criticized. And again, the Year Zero storyline, it is really dumb. I mean, it, a large part of it is the Riddler takes over Gotham City for the better part of a year, and I don't care if he's like Russell T. Davies, Sherlock levels of beautiful mind that he would get out of any prison. How was he not just put to death after taking over in a major American city? But they, that it is what it is. Now I'm going to ask you, Ben, what's a character's or what one Karama character's origin do you love, and what sort of retcons have been applied to that over the years?
I gotta be honest with you. I really, really love the Wonder Woman origin as done by George Perez when after the post-crisis Wonder Woman origin. I love that origin story. That's one of the books that's on my reread list. I just liked how Greek and epic it felt. And I liked how grounded it felt at the same time. I just liked a lot of the elements about it. It really built up Diana as this character who is a warrior, but also so full of compassion and love. Unfortunately, with the many different changes and reboots to the DC universe, we sort of are stuck with Wonder Woman is essentially a female Hercules now. So.
I have said this before. I've always disliked the fact when people make Wonder Woman a Disney princess, and then in comics you're like, oh, she's the greatest warrior. You put a weapon in her hand, and she's probably the most dangerous person alive. La la la. I'm just having fucking birds and shit and deer show up and sitting in a forest. It's like, choose one.
Yeah, I and when you said the Disney princess thing, the first thing I thought of was this fan comic sort of thing I'd seen on years ago where, she's in a very Disney princess-esque dress, but with the Wonder Woman colors, and she's got a sword over shoulder, and she's already slain the dragon. Oh, you wanted to help? Oh, that is very lovely, but I've taken care of it. And I agree with you, Ben. Like initially, like after. For years afterwards, they really struggled to maintain that grandeur with the Perez Wonder Woman origin, and I don't think that it slipped over time as any long-running series tends to do. And when they rebooted with the New 52, and they made her, she's Zeus's daughter, and she becomes like the new god of war. As like, eh, but a lot. Since Rebirth, which is, and we've talked about Rebirth, how they've brought all these classic elements back into it. What they've done with the title since Rebirth, it doesn't measure up that well against the Perez, but the Wonder Woman title from Rebirth going forward, I would recommend. It's a lot more of that classic Wonder Woman taste than New 52. New 52 is New Coke. Wonder Woman Rebirth is classic Coke.
Is Jason part of that continuity?
Yeah, he's in there.
Oh my God.
But you talk about Wonder Woman. I always liked the version, like the TV show. I've always loved that origin because I grew up watching, the Linda Carter Wonder Woman cartoon, and how that positive energy really influenced some of the character down the line, especially in the cold open. And again, I never remember what episode it is, but one of the cold opens to an episode of Batman Brave and the Bold, where Steve Trevor, I almost said Tyler, Steve Trevor and Batman are strapped to these ICBMs, and Wonder Woman comes in. She's drawn to kind of look like the Golden Age Wonder Woman, but they give her that 70s type musical entrance, and Steve is drawn to kind of look like the Steve from the original show. I love when versions of that are kind of interwoven together. So.
Well, for me, I have a controversial opinion. I actually like the new 52 Wonder Woman, sort of. It is a hodgepodge of shit, but it's also enjoyable. It's probably the only comic, like I said, it's probably the only comic in New 52 that I read. But the creator, whoever wrote that series, was trying to ground Wonder Woman into Greek mythology, which I liked. I'm a big fan of Greek mythology. She doesn't come off as a Hercules. If you don't read the fucking comic, you're like, oh, she comes off as Hercules. No, she's more like a fucking Perseus. And it is heavily, heavily influenced by the God of War series. And that's what I don't like about it. Because you have people, like, they chose the different fucking gods, and you have, like, Ares. I'm an old man, and I don't wear any shoes, and my feet are always bloody. And then you have Hera, who's walking around with a fucking goat head on her fucking shoulder, nothing else. Different depictions like that. It's
Yeah,
fucking dumb.
wasn't Hades like this weird kid in like a suit of armor, and his head was like a weird candelabra or
Yeah.
something? Yeah.
And that's inspired by God of War because they made fucking creative depictions of the gods, which do not match Greek mythology.
Now, another character whose origin I love and is Spider-Man. Again, it with great power comes great responsibility. If only Peter had tripped that burglar and not been a colossal douche to the douche who was a colossal douche to him. And it's that origin, they've retconned elements of it, but never like Uncle Ben, the robber kills Uncle Ben. It's always that. But they've added dumb stuff to it, like the whole reason he was there was he had heard this gangster, one of the first retcons that was, they had heard a gangster had hidden this stash of cash in their house, and he, after he kills Benny, actually had broken into the house and he had found it in this old mattress, but it is all mildewed and eaten away by like silverfish or something. One overall massive retcon to the origin, and I love the entire series. I read this in high school, was John Byrne's Spider-Man Chapter 1. Now, I enjoy that series because it's basically a greatest hits of Spider-Man villains. You know, it's, and it ends, every issue ends kind of like a serial, like an old movie serial, where there's this cliffhanger ending going into the next one where Peter defeats Dr. Octopus and then he runs into Electro and it kind of carries over into the next one. But the introduced stuff, which thankfully Marvel has since launched, that they haven't retconned it out of existence. They just don't talk about it anymore, how Dr. Octopus's experiment with his arms that blew up in his face and welded the arms to his body was also the same experiment that Peter was going to see in Amazing Fantasy 15. Again, that's more Joker killing the Waynes than anything. And then down the line, you have one retcon to the origin, and it comes out of the Clone Saga. And you both know that I enjoy the Clone Saga because it's bad, and I know that it's bad. But they have, at the time where Peter's spider powers sputtered out, and he and Mary Jane moved to Portland, and Ben Reilly was Spider-Man, he ends up falling in love with this photographer who the woman turns out to be the daughter of the robber that killed Uncle Ben. And then he doesn't actually find this out until like the last, her last appearance, where she, you know, she's trying to kill Spider-Man and she's found out who Ben Reilly is. And then she realizes her, you know, it was all a mistake. And she just leaves his life because she doesn't want to bring any harm to him. Stuff like that. And then there's two major retcons to Peter's family. In, we just know that Peter grew up living with Aunt May and Uncle Ben, right?
Yes.
And his parents, for years, we don't know what happened to his parents. We just know that his mom and dad are dead. And then they turn out to be S.H.I.E.L.D. agents or spies. Something like that. And then that horrible storyline in the 90s where they came back, but they were like shape-shifting androids sent by the Chameleon.
Which, let's talk about the worst retcon to Spider-Man.
That, yes, he has a sister?
No.
Yeah.
That he's Aunt, okay, May's son.
Oh, you're talking about Trouble. Wait. Oh, my God. No. 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 No!
Okay, they're Palpatine.
I have a question for whoever fucking wrote the goddamn series.
Mark Millar.
Why is Aunt May... Mark Millar. Why is Aunt May 80 years old when Peter's fucking 14? Is she just, like, an alcoholic and looks older than she should be? She looks 40 years fucking older? That liver is fucking toast, girl.
Okay, I think we gotta put part of the blame on that on Ditko. Like, not, like, negative blame, just, like, he drew Aunt May and Uncle Ben to look like, you know, kindly old Aunt May and Uncle Ben, but by virtue of his art style, they look way older than they should be. I mean, I have like three Uncle Peters and like six Uncle Nicks in my family. Jesus. A lot of my great aunts and uncles kind of looked a little bit like that growing up, but they never looked like, you know, Aunt May, who like a stiff breeze and all of a sudden she's got cancer kind of ill. So, but yeah, also I tried reading Trouble once and I just felt uncomfortable. Like, why do I need to know that Aunt May and Peter's mom wanted to fuck? Like, it's around the time.
Because Marvel wanted new girls to read the series. So they made a comic book targeted for girls. Don't you love comics and romance? And drama?
There's no good way for me to answer that.
I'm not saying... I'm not trying to say making comics directed towards girls is bad. I'm just saying they did it really fucking badly.
Which is really funny, yeah. because a book that they had running around the same time, which was doing really well, was was it Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane?
You know, I've never actually read that one.
It depends on your
How
taste.
was that?
You mean the alternate title, Bitches Love Spider-Man?
You're not wrong, but what I'm saying is that book was infinitely more popular with the female reader base.
I'm just like, I don't need to know that Aunt May was hot when she was young, or she was.
Oh, it's even creepier than that. Aunt May looked like Gwen Stacy. And his mom looked like fucking
Mary Jane.
Mary Jane. Oh,
okay, that was Terry Dodson did the art on that, right?
No, yes. He did.
Oh,
yes, yes.
Oh shit.
No, and we all know that Terry Dodson has like a preoccupation with drawing every woman in Spider-Man's orbit to look like Gwen Stacy. Oh God, I'm never not going to be able to think about that, Red. You bastard. I love you, buddy. Don't ever change.
So, for those who haven't read it, it's a story about how at 17, Aunt May and Peter's mom, what the hell is it, Mary?
Mary, yeah.
Mary, yeah.
Richard and Mary.
And Richard and Uncle Ben, they all go to a weird fucking camp thing. They're like, oh, we're going to have a great time this summer, blah, blah, blah. And they end up being fucking workers and don't have any fun. And because they're not having fun, they end up fucking and having a fucking love triangle and dumb shit like that. Because Aunt May is a huge slut. And
well,
Mary,
I mean,
Peter's mom, wanted to wait until she got married to have sex. And this frustrated everybody except for Uncle Ben.
I'm sorry, did they turn Aunt May into Marty's mom from Back to the Future?
Pretty much.
God. And yeah, and just to bring it back there, the addition of Teresa Parker. Now, from what I remember, they had introduced this character years.
Yes, many
before,
years ago.
And she lied about being his.
She didn't lie.
She wasn't. She wasn't supposed to actually be like flesh and blood sister to Peter. But then recently, in the last run of Spectacular Spider-Man, they officially made her his biological sister.
Yes, and what you're leaving out some very critical points here. The story was Peter is trying to track down like hints of his parents' secret agent past. By the way, Peter's parents were secret agents. And he comes across this girl named Teresa who says she's actually Richard and Mary's daughter. And they team up and they do some things. They have like a spy adventure in like Morocco, go to casinos, and it ends up, turns out that, I think it was Mastermind. Like a telepath was suddenly making Peter see Teresa looking more like him than she actually did. And the Kingpin was involved somehow. Kingpin found out that Peter's Spider-Man. Epic fight in the cave. Kingpin gets his head hit by a cave rock, forgot everything, and that was the story.
They Fred Flintstone Kingpin?
This is not a story from the 70s. I know this sounds like a story from the 70s with the Kingpin gets hit by a rock. No, this was a story in like the late 90s, early aughts.
How many villains have brain damage from getting hit in the head and fucking forgetting shit?
I was rereading some of Amazing Spider-Man from the time Otto was in Peter's body, and he had this flashback to he was thinking about, you know, when he's seen a doctor and talking about all the times that he had been beating up Peter, and then he realized in the present that Peter was always pulling his punches.
Because he punches
like
the dude's head off.
Well, yeah.
His first outing as Spider-Man, he's fucking fighting a guy. He doesn't punch a dude, he breaks his fucking leg or something when he hits him. And he's like, holy fuck, how strong am I?
Wasn't you mean he punched the Scorpion's jaw off? Wasn't
yeah,
that
Yeah, that's what it is. And he's like, he's been pulling his fucking punches this whole fucking time.
Yeah. And you get retcons like that. One of the dumbest retcons to at least Spider-Man history was during the Clone Saga. I remember them intimating that the Scryer, which is like this tall,
We don't talk about the Scryer.
Okay.
The Scryer doesn't need to be talked about unless we're ever talking about Clone Saga, because that's the only place he's ever mattered and the only place he's ever appeared.
Wow.
Okay, then. So back to you, Ben. What's another origin that you've enjoyed that has also been kind of retconned or added to?
I definitely enjoy the Spider-Man origin a lot. I think Ditko did a lot with very little. Most attempts to add on to it have made things worse. Some made things better because you mentioned how Peter like showed up the guy who was a jerk. In the original story, it wasn't about the guy that was robbed wasn't a jerk to Peter. It was just Peter decided, hey, this doesn't involve me. I'm not going to get involved. Making the guy a jerk made it feel so much better for Peter that, oh, I showed this jerk off. And then the realization that because of his selfishness.
That's something they really took from the Raimi movies.
It definitely was, like, the first time I ever saw it was in the Raimi movies. The other thing to add about that is JMS made a pretty interesting retcon or addition to Spider-Man's origin. So, as everyone knows, Peter feels the guilt of the fact that he is directly responsible for Uncle Ben's death for not stopping the robber. JMS's run, when Aunt May finds out that Peter is Spider-Man, and she confronts him about it, there's this... That was one of my favorite issues in there. You have Romita Jr. doing some of his better Spider-Man work, definitely being inspired by the work his father did, because the way he drew Aunt May in there was definitely inspired by how Senior drew Aunt May. But then Aunt May said, no, Peter, it wasn't your fault. It was my fault. And you're like, what? And then she talks about how, you know, that night, Aunt May and Uncle Ben got into an argument, and she said it was just a weird argument that all married couples get into. It doesn't even matter what it was. And Ben is such a gentle person that he doesn't, you know, whenever things get, you know, arguments get a little too heated, he just walks away. So he went off and went on to a walk in the middle of the night, came back and came across the burglar. So Aunt May has been blaming herself for Uncle Ben's death for years, while Peter was blaming himself for Uncle Ben's death for many years. I liked that.
No, that was a good retcon too. For a second there, I thought you were going to invoke "He Who Shall Not Be Named," also from that era.
No.
Or the twins.
If we're talking about the actual Spider-Man, worst Spider-Man retcon, that would be One More Day.
Yes. Name a contest.
Yeah. Just thinking about that makes me sad. But what's, like, okay, aside from Spider-Man, Ben, what's another character whose origin you enjoy?
Well, a lot of the classic ones. I definitely like, I definitely am a big fan of the Superman origin. I feel like the Kents are a big component to what makes Superman work, and I really enjoy that. I'm a big fan of Kal-El, the Kal-El origin of Kal-El, Kal-El Superboy from the 90s, where I just like the way they described it. You know, you have the Cadmus boys, who were the original Newsboy Legion, who basically, when confronted by Superman and Superboy about, hey, okay, what's going on here? Because he's not vulnerable to fire, and he doesn't have vision powers. And the Cadmus boys said, oh, yeah, actually, we can't actually clone the Kryptonian genome at this point. It's too tough. So what we did was we took a human donor, and we modified it to be as Kryptonian as possible. And what that meant was they explained that out of all of Superman's powers, the only one they could truly replicate quickly was Superman had a electrochemical aura around his body that made his clothes as impervious as him. And they were able to replicate that with Connell, and that was basically how Connell had the tactile telekinesis, which, by the way, did simulate most of Superman's powers.
Aside from the energy abilities.
For years, people have always thought, hey, how does Superman's powers work? And one of the main theories was tactile telekinesis. That's where it comes from. Because he can do things like lift boats and not have the boat collapse.
Or like
its own weight.
The Justice League movie where you see him rescue all those people by literally picking up the apartment building and flying it away. Like,
yeah. And you know. Things like stopping a fucking plane mid-flight and not having all the passengers barf out their own internal organs.
Everyone to the front of the bus. Yeah, stuff like that. And, yeah, I mean, who Superboy's father truly turned out to be, I mean, originally was director, was it Westfield from
Katniss? Paul Westfield. And, yeah. Paul Westfield was a son of a bitch. He was a horrible son of a bitch. And Connell found out who he was, and he got over that trauma. And it took him about 20 issues to really get over it. And what I really liked about that him getting over that trauma was there was a point in that time at the end of that saga where Superman invited Connell to his to the Fortress of Solitude and let Connell, like, you know, use Kryptonian VR set, almost like the Animus from Assassin's Creed, to relive the memories of... this is before he had the name Connell, by the way. This is the story where he got the name Connell. And he lived through the memories of the original Connell from Krypton during the Black Zero riots, where there was this whole thing about genetically engineered beings on Krypton that were called that were being led by a revolutionary group called the Black Zero that were trying to be like, you know, clone beings have rights to, sort of thing. And at the end of the story, you had the Superman give Superboy the name Connell, saying, you are now my cousin. You are now a part of my family. And I always thought that was great.
Yeah. And as much as I enjoy what Johns did with Superboy's origin later on, just for the sake of no more reason than it is as comic booky as comic book origins can get, I will say that the original, like, Connell... like, your family now, that origin is by far the superior origin. I mean, yeah, for most comic fans, it makes more sense to, well, of course he's got powers because his DNA is half Superman and half that bald bastard that owns all of Metropolis. But that's just comic books. It's not hard work. And you know that, or the first origin, the better origin, there was more heart and soul put into that than what Johns did in that specific instance of Johns' work. With Superman, I'm going to ask you guys, do you prefer the Kents to be alive or be dead at the point that he becomes Superman for the first time?
At the point he becomes Superman, I prefer them to be alive. But I also, it sounds morbid, but for Superman, it's a lesson he needs. And I always believe that Pa Kent should die. It's because it's a major lesson for him that he can't save everyone.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's because, I mean, the original, like, pre-crisis origin of Superman was, you know, Ma and Pa Kent. Heck, I think they even had that in Action Comics 1. It's been years since I've read that, where... you know, he's going to Metropolis, you know, to start his career as a newspaper reporter and Superman, and he goes to visit them one last time at their graves. And then we got the Byrne origin, which stood for years, and that's Ma and Pa Kent find him, raise him. They're always there for him. And then that's something that they took both of those and replicated that to some kind of effect with the New 52, because when we first meet Superman in New 52, Ma and Pa Kent are dead. He's just, depending whether you read Superman or Action Comics, because for like the first year and change, Action Comics was set 5 years in the past, just after he became Superman, where, you know, his costume was a t-shirt and a cape and jeans. And then Superman was set in the modern day. And then after the events of Doomsday Clock, and have since been confirmed to be, Doomsday Clock has been confirmed to be canon, in definitely in Rebirth, you find out Ma and Pa Kent are alive. In fact, they had, I think it's an issue recently of Action Comics where they take Connell, Connor, to the farm, and you see them like remember the history they had with raising Superboy, which largely came after the John's origin. But I always liked Ma and Pa Kent being alive. You know, it's not that Clark always runs them whenever he has a problem, but it's nice that he was able to go and, you know, get some of that homespun wisdom from his mom and dad. Now, I want to ask one other supplemental question. What's your favorite version of Ma and Pa Kent in TV or film?
No, Invincible Son, don't save me.
I have lots of favorite versions. I especially like the early post-crisis version all the way up to Death of. There's this really trippy story in Funeral for a Friend where Pa Kent had a heart attack around the same time that Superman was killed by Doomsday. And Pa Kent goes into a journey in the afterlife with the aid of Kismet, defining forces of the universe, to save Superman's soul from the afterlife. And it sounds weird and trippy, but I liked it.
Yeah, that was...
Didn't he have Sergeant Rock with him, though?
No, it was just Pa Kent and Kismet.
Yeah. He fled, because part of the afterlife journey was Pa Kent flashing back to his military service and such like that, and fighting through his own, you know, the ghosts that are trying to take him to the afterlife. And he's like, he fights off them, and he runs into like this Kryptonian procession where you get the this weird albino monkey man character that gave Superman the Eradicator in an early storyline after Crisis. I think that was all in Adventures of Superman 500 that they had this, and then, because it played into the idea that, you know, the four elements of Superman were split amongst the four pretenders, and they heavily intimated that part of his spirit or his essence had gone into John Henry Irons, which went a long way to, you know, directing him to become the Man of Steel. Now, when it comes to retconning origins, Marvel had this crossover in, I believe it was 2010, called Original Sin. That the long and the short of it is somebody killed Uatu the Watcher and stolen his eyes, like his physical baby blues, out of that giant dome head.
Yeah, it was a Mort of a Month character named the Orb.
No, that wasn't actually him. He got one of them, but the guy that killed Uatu and ripped one of the eyes out was actually Old Man Fury. And this is where they kind of tear apart Marvel's sliding timescale. Now, for years, you know, we've talked about several times in the show before how Marvel doesn't, basically at this point, everything that's happened in the Marvel Universe from Fantastic Four number one till now has taken place in like the last 10, 15 years. And that's how they explain. That's why Cap isn't just out of time by 20 years like he originally was when he came back in Avengers. He's now like 100 years plus. So the idea is that all of the 1960s spy-fi adventures of Nick Fury and pals, you know, where S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters is underneath the barbershop and all that sort of thing, they kind of lock that into that actual time frame with the effect of the Infinity Formula, because that's the juice that was keeping Fury and Gabe Jones and Dum Dum Dugan young all these years. Well, it turns out that the Infinity Formula is breaking down and Fury is starting to age at an increased rate, and he's about to die. Of all the secrets he knows, and there are many, he is also known as the Man on the Wall, and he has to go out into the universe and find, like, these alien threats and assassinate them with, like, a space sniper rifle, you know, telling them to, you know, fuck off, don't come near Earth.
I thought he was chained to a spot on the moon.
No, that comes at the end of it, because by the end of the story, and it ends up with one of the eyes becoming merged with the orb, and now he has access to, like, all the knowledge that Uatu had, and because of, you know, the grave, you know, you murdered Uatu, you murdered a Watcher, like, this can't go unpunished. He's physically, he can walk around on the moon. He's not chained to any one spot specifically, but he walks around with, like, these manacles on, and he is basically locked in there to keep watch over the Earth and record history. Now, aside from that, a lot of comics had tie-in one or two, three-issue arcs where you see, like, retcons or original sin, like, these secrets that a lot of characters kept. Now, two of those goes in the early days of the Fantastic Four. You find out that Reed, and for all these years that Reed was been unable to cure Ben Grimm of being the Thing, he could have cured Ben within year one, but Johnny Storm was fucking around in Reed's lab and upset the settings on this cosmic Barca lounger that Ben was going to sit in and was going to absorb the cosmic rays out of him and return him just being plain old Ben Grimm. And that, you know, Ben basically says, stay the fuck away from me or I'm going to kill you. But the bigger one was you go that, into... Sorry?
That doesn't make sense. Because, well, Ben has long since accepted that he's the Thing.
Well, this is in the early days where there was... It's set in, like I said, year one or two of Fantastic Four, where, you know, Ben would randomly turn back into himself and then back into the Thing. And he had, this is set before he had accepted being the Thing. So, you know, having accepted, then finding out he could have not been the Thing all this time and wasted his life, and he was pissed at Johnny for a couple of years after.
He
didn't
waste his life. He became one of the greatest heroes on Earth.
But think about it, Red. It's like you would spend all these years as this rock-encrusted man and, you know, accepting, yeah, I'm never going to be human, just trying to learn your life, but find out that one of your best friends futzed with something that would have prevented this. It's, yeah, he became one of the best heroes. I'm just saying, wouldn't you be upset?
If I had been the Thing for years and I had gone through the character growth that Ben has gone through over many, many years, proving himself worth, like, one of the greatest heroes ever to exist, and finding out my friend fucked up, I'd be a little pissed. Yeah, I'd be like, oh, you fucked it up, but in the end, I had a great life.
Well, so. I mean, he did eventually forgive Johnny, but in that moment, he's like, stay the fuck away from me. And they also had the stuff, like, at this time, Marvel had been trying to produce, or get the rights to Miracle Man, and they bought the character Angela from Neil Gaiman, and this is the storyline where they introduce her into being, she's the unknown third child of Frigga and Odin, except you find out there's this 10th realm called Heaven, H-apostrophe-V-I-N, where she was kidnapped years ago in one of the countless cosmic wars that Odin has fought. But the biggest one... Sorry?
The person who kidnapped her have, like, a pig nose and pale white, wore a bat on his chest.
No. And the biggest character thing, and it's only known to one of two characters involved, was Tony Stark futzed with the bomb that created Bruce Banner. Now, Bruce found that, and he set everything back to, you know, zero. But Tony, because this is at a time, this is before Iron Man, like a couple weeks before he became Iron Man, where he's still drinking like 6 bottles of Jack a day. And he also, once he sobers up and he looks at the math, he realizes that the yield is greater than what Bruce has calculated. And because he pissed Bruce off by trying to fix the bomb and calling him like a wimp and a milksop and all that, and then sends an email, Bruce, here's the math, you're off by a magnitude greater than what you think, and Bruce just ignores it and goes off with the test and becomes, you know, the Green Goliath. But into modern continuity, Tony still knows that he fucked up Bruce's life like that because he was an asshole and he didn't try hard enough to get him to understand that the math was wrong. Bruce doesn't know this. Or at least he knew after Original Sin and then the consequences of, you know, one of Uatu'i's blowing up wipes somebody's memory, because that's kind of how the storyline ended.
Lame.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, there is a... Go ahead, Fred.
I was going to say anything.
All right,
I was
going
to say it's... Sorry, just one thing, Ben, is I have to imagine that Angela being Thor's sister in the comics is entirely why they made Hela his sister in the MCU.
They made Hela his sister to make it a more personal story.
Well, that, and he's got a sister in the comics, but, you know, it would take too long to explain Angela's origin in the movies, and there you go. I'm just saying it's an element. It's not a huge element, but I'm sure it's there. But what were you going to say, Ben?
Now, an addition or a change made to an origin that I sort of liked was, this is actually one of the few things I kind of liked in Year Zero, the very beginning of Year Zero, mind you, Batman Year Zero. Like, when it suddenly became Riddler took over the whole city and no one would fuck with him, bullshit, that, you know, that stuff's garbage. Stuff about Jim Gordon being a dirty cop, didn't enjoy that. There's this one scene where Bruce Wayne, as Bruce Wayne, tracks down and finds Joe Chill. And the reason I like this is, you know, Bruce has been working on a conspiracy theory about why his parents were killed, because his parents were the richest, most affluent, family in Gotham. And Bruce had this whole theory about the mob wanting to do a hit on him and shit like that. And Bruce comes around Joe Chill, who's like a druggie and a junkie and just in like a slum apartment. Bruce finds him and the guy's like, no, it was just a random crime. And that sort of just broke Bruce's whole mindset about, like, his parents were not so important to a criminal. And in my opinion, the writer, I think, sort of dropped the ball in the later execution of this. Because what I think it was, if done properly, that would have been a great message about Batman realizing that crime is random. You know, some crime is at times very random, and the victim could be anybody. And that would have made him a better Batman. Writer sort of dropped the ball on how he handled it. But I like that scene, the idea of Joe Chill just being this guy confronted by Bruce Wayne, and he is just kind of apathetic and out there. And there's something about that scene that was interesting.
And that's something about Batman's origin in the various origins over the decades with Batman. It's like, pre-crisis, he famously found Joe Chill and revealed that, you know, you created me. You know, they had that in, I think that was a Dick Sprang art.
Yes, I believe that that story was actually masterfully done, in my opinion, adapted by Batman Brave and the Bold, Chill of the Night, worth watching.
Yeah, where they had... Kevin Conroy was the Phantom Stranger, Mark Hamill was the Spectre, and
fucking Oswald.
Yeah, and Adam West, God rest your soul, sir. Adam West and I forget which Catwoman voiced Ma and Pa Wayne in that episode. You had that, and then after Crisis, I don't remember rightly after Crisis they ever brought in Joe Chill. But I remember reading, like, he never found the guy that, you know, killed his parents. So that's what drove him for years. And then we had Zero Hour and Infinite Crisis, which just played hodgepodge with the timeline. You got Batman, Superman. The one thing I've always enjoyed about the Flash origin, specifically Wally West Flash, you know, the classic Silver Age origin is, you know, he's the president of the Blue Valley Flash fan club. His mom knows, you know, is dating Barry Allen. She knows the Flash, and he meets Flash, and he sets up his Flash lab. He's like, oh, it's just like this. And then randomly, Lightning Bolt comes in, gives him the same origin. And then they kind of retcon that years later where Barry subconsciously called down the Lightning Bolt. And some writers intimate, and I like this idea, although I don't think it actually works in the long run, was when Barry sacrifices himself in Crisis on Infinite Earths, his energy goes back in time and merges with the Lightning Bolt that gave him his powers and kind of becomes like this self-fulfilling prophecy like that. But the idea that Barry, whether subconsciously or actively, he was always part of Wally's origin like that, you know, versus other parts of the Flash origins, like how Zoom goes back in time and kills Barry's mother, and now that's all the writers seem to think of.
About the other part of Zoom with Barry, with remember the first time you kissed your girlfriend, Barry?
Yeah, that was just creepy.
That wasn't an actual comic page. That was a fucking edit.
I know, but it was still funny.
I've seen that edit. It's creepy. But, I mean, you got other parts of the origin of villains within The Flash. I mean, I like the original origin. He was just this robber. You know, Captain Cold was just this robber. You know, he was a career criminal. But then they deepen his background, which kind of made me enjoy the character a lot more because, you know, you understand him. So I'm not a criminal, but I kind of get why he's like that and how they brought in, you know, he had the abusive dad and he had the grandfather who delivered ice. And I mean, they made him more sympathetic in a way. I know. Is there anything with the Flash that you guys think of that? I'm sure there's tons I'm forgetting about the Flash origin.
Spoilers for anyone who reads today's Flash comic. It's been retconned again.
I'm not even surprised at this point.
You know, I never liked the fact that Barry's mom was killed and his dad's in prison. I never liked that. It's way too dark an origin for a character like The Flash.
I don't know why everybody is obsessed with recreating Batman's origin for every fucking hero. It's lazy. And yeah. It's dumb. And Barry Allen's original origin was that he followed in his father's footsteps. Like, his dad was a cop. His grandfather was a cop. His last name's Allen, so it's Irish, which, as most people know, especially in Chicago, there's a long history of Irish people being cops. And that's where Central City is. It's supposed to be Chicago.
Yes.
Yeah, because I remember in the early days of, like, when they rebooted The Flash after Crisis and Wally has become, you know, the Scarlet Speedster, and they had that horrible Millennium crossover where the Manhunters were trying to take over the universe, and a lot of people like Lana Lang and Wally West's dad had become replaced by these androids. And I wonder if that's something that when they came up with the Zoom kill Barry's mom, that they looked at that and was like, hell, that's an idea. Because you can't always use dumb ideas to make good ideas. It's just, it's dumb to begin with. Yeah, I always like the... Sorry, you go, Red.
I get why the writer did it. John did it. He wants to make the whole fucking Professor Zoom versus Flash more integrated. And doesn't need to be. Like, the Flash doesn't need a Joker. And for years, we've been suffering because of that. Because constantly, all we get is Professor Zoom stories, Professor Zoom stories, Professor Zoom stories. It's like, fuck, can't you make something else? Like, he's Flash is famous for having one of the largest and best rogues gallery in fucking comics, and you don't fucking use them.
That's another one. Like I always said that I always said that the Joker challenge with Batman, put Joker in a box, don't let anyone touch it for 16 months. Same thing with fucking Zoom. Put Zoom in a box.
Yeah.
Can't touch. Can't touch the box. I would actually. I would give that challenge. I would give the challenge to the fucking Flash TV show, but it's gonna be gone soon. Like, you know, here's your. You can't have a speedster villain this season. I mean, they kind of did the Thinker as not a speedster villain. Kind of. I'll give the slightest bit of credit for that. Not a lot, but the slightest bit.
Well, I mean, Flash can move fast. The Thinker can think fast. You'd think that would have written itself. I mean, honestly, I love the original, like, pre-crisis Zoom where he's this obsessed fanboy from the future who's jealous of Barry Allen, and that's it. You know, he wants to outdo Flash, and he's become a villain to enact this plan. You know, and when you think pre-crisis Flash, what's the most important storyline involving Professor Zoom? It's like where Barry Allen snapped his neck like a stack of dimes. And after that, you know, they didn't use Zoom. Like, they used Zoom here and there, like the return of Barry Allen, which I think was one of Mark Waid's first story arcs when he took over the title. And this is during John's run in The Flash, where he redefined a lot about The Flash. He created Hunter Zolomon, and we got Zoom. And I much prefer Zoom as a villain versus Professor Zoom.
Not me.
Zolomon is just shitty repeat.
As somebody who grew up with Wally West, and Wally West is my Flash, when they introduce Zoom, it's like he doesn't need a Professor Zoom. He doesn't need that opposite character. He's beyond that. But no, here's this character that is the exact opposite of the Flash, and he's super evil, and we could just write stories and be fucking lazy cunts.
Yep.
Well, I prefer Zoom because of how, like, that thing with, like, you know, he's gonna make heroes better through suffering, which I just enjoy that more than the original Professor Zoom. And unfortunately, the huge success that they had with Zoom, and then the new 52 happens, like, you know, he's still there, but he's just depowered and locked in Iron Heights. But now they've taken that energy and tried to apply it to the original Zoom, and just now they've made him this creepy, obsessed stalker fanboy who wants to just replace the Flash instead of outdoing him. So now he's gone. I'm going to go back in time and kill your ma. But
they fucked up Hunter Zolomon big time. They forgot one thing. When Hunter Zolomon first designed, it was like, Wally West controls the Speed Force, and if you make a fucking opposite Flash, that Flash is going to have the Speed Force, and Wally can just take it away.
Yep.
So we're going to give him time powers. And they fucking forgot that his powers come from time.
Yeah.
And that's something they took from Zoom, too. Because original Professor Zoom was just straight up Speed Force. And then Hunter, basically, he doesn't actually have access to the Speed Force, as he mentally moves himself up and down his own personal time stream, which turns into physical speed somehow. I still don't understand how that science works.
Well, I can kind of explain it. I have a similar character I created years prior to that.
Yeah.
But that's another story.
Sorry, Ben, you go.
Well, I want to throw a grenade in the room here, because I know one character who has many origins. Yes, I'm throwing the grenade in the room. The pin has been pulled, JT. Go for it. Dive on the grenade.
The classic origin of the Golden Age is the best. The Silver Age origin is pretty good, too. And when they tried to make it better in the 80s with Hawkworld, that's where they... they just pissed right in the soup in that one. John's tried to do the best he could. And while it wasn't perfect, it was a lot better than Hawk World. And I don't think you can argue against that.
Red, what did John world. Red? What did John Byrne say again?
That Hawkman suits a day of an age when it was fucking awesome to have a dude with hawk claws bearing down on you from the sky. But unfortunately today, that is not fucking cool. He just looks like a fucking joke. And he needs to be retired.
Well, sadly, or shockingly, I should say, I don't agree with that. The original Golden Age, he's the reincarnation of an Egyptian prince. That's the best origin. And they didn't retcon that with the Silver Age Hawkman. They just, you know, it's like what they did. They had Green Lantern. Okay, Green Lantern's now a space cop. Hawkman, he's this alien cop from another planet who just happens to dress. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's when in the 80s, where after, you know, Batman Year One and the Killing Joke and everything going
Hawk World was an Elseworlds imprint.
Originally, but they never told the writers who were writing Hawkman after that because they read, this is the origin of Hawkman.
It had a fucking giant ass Elseworlds on the spine and on the.
Okay, Ben, front. You can't bring this shit up and then try and put the genie back in the bottle. And we have established dozens of times previously on this podcast that writers coming into a title after another writer is leaving don't always pay attention to everything that came before.
That's true. By the way, just a minor segue, and then we're going to end the show. This is how Donna Troy was created as well. Because as everyone knows, there were lots of stories done where Superman, they did Superman as a boy, Superboy. And they did the same thing with Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman as a girl, Wonder Girl. And what happened was they wanted to do a new team hero book. So they're like, oh, let's do Teen Titans. And they're like, okay, what heroes do we have? We have this art of a teenage Wonder Woman. All right, great. This is a new character, right? Yeah, absolutely. And like, oh, wait, that was not an existing character. Okay, Magic Mirror. There was a Magic Mirror.
Last character. Sorry, you go, Red.
I was going to say, for some fucking reason, I've never, before you guys told me the fucking origin of Donna Troy, I've never looked up her origin. And I always assumed that she was just an Amazonian.
Just random Amazonian.
And yeah, she just called Diana's sister. That's all. To me, that's like her fucking perfect origin. Why don't they just do that?
Exactly. Well, now you know. Now, the last origin that has been that I enjoyed the not knowing his origin, and that was part of his charm, was Wolverine. Now, when we were first introduced to Wolverine in Giant Size X-Men number one, he's this badass Canadian agent. He's got these steak knives that pop out of his knuckles.
Actually,
he's a badass.
He didn't premiere in Giant Size X-Men number one. He appeared in The Incredible Hulk.
I was wondering, you know, I had honestly put money on Ben making that voice, so I owe myself a Coke. Yes, you are correct, Red. It was 181, the tail end of last panel of 181, and then Incredible Hulk 182 is like the full-on debut of the Wolverine. He's this badass. Yes, but we don't talk about the whiskers. He's this badass, you know, he threatens Sykes' presence as team leader constantly. He's hitting on Jean, you know, he's the rogue samurai. You know, we all love these elements of Wolverine, and trickled through the years we find elements of his origin. This is what I loved about Wolverine, is we find out he was this former American or Canadian ace special agent. He worked for, you know, he was captured by Weapon X and experimented on. That's how he got his claws. You know, we have that big revelation post Fatal Attractions where Magneto sucks the adamantium out of his body and we find out his claws are actual mutations on his body, you know, before Marvel turns him into like some sort of Mongoloid caveman character for years.
I remember having, what do you call it, Marvel Universe Encyclopedia, and it actually showed Wolverine's claws and how they were implanted in it. They were implanted into his body.
There were metal sheets.
And you even look on the background in the original X-Men movie where they're looking at his skeletons, and it almost looks like they have those implants, like he has those implants in the movie.
Well, but if then you look at the, if you look at the X-rays of that movie, by the way, I actually love the X-ray scene because it shows plates that are crudely screwed on to a skeleton.
Yeah.
It's not like a smooth surface. And I love that crude science and the horrific imagery of basically you're imagining the scientists scrapping a guy down, cutting him up, and actually pulling skin and flesh back and bolting stuff on and then putting his flesh back on is the horrific imagery you get from that image. And
Versus the needles just oozing the liquid
yes.
adamantium over his bones in Origins. Now, I love not knowing. You get those little bits and you fill in the gaps on your own, such like that. I even loved Origin. Now, I both hate and love Origin, where you see the actual true origin of Wolverine, that he's really is
James Howitt.
Canadian from like James Howlett. He was a sickly little kid when his mutation kicked in. He accidentally kills his real dad, who is the groundskeeper. They heavily imply the dog, his brother, grows up to be Sabretooth, but later on they retcon that to be Dog is an actual separate character.
And
But I like
where was
knowing
James Howlett born in Canada?
Alberta. His dad was like a
Well, there you go, Red. He's a
Maybe
local
Quebec or
boy.
something.
They actually looked into his history and, well, into Canadian history. And Calgary, Alberta wasn't established as Calgary, Alberta. It became Calgary, Alberta later on. But the town that he grows up in is actually the founding town that becomes Calgary, Alberta.
Wow,
Yeah.
real local
It,
boy.
I,
Now,
yeah. So, I mean, I love. So just let me finish two things, Ben. Like, I
yes.
love the fact that we know the origin. The readers know the origin. At that point, Wolverine did not know the truth. And that's where it should have fucking ended.
I honestly
But
would have
no.
preferred they didn't give Wolverine an origin because his healing factor made where he could be any age and basically he could backtrace and backdate any previous Wolverine appearance without big fuss or muss. And now you're sort of in a box, and now the mysterious badass is like in a
You haven't
box.
found the end of the box yet. You know where he started. You don't know where he's going to end up.
Now,
I
interesting
mean,
story
I don't
about
think it's as limiting.
now interesting
If we're
story
talking
about go ahead, Red.
about local boys, Sabretooth is from Edmonton, where I live.
Fuck.
The creator of Wolverine was born and raised in Calgary. And there's a hockey rivalry between Edmonton and Calgary. So
That's
he kind of put that hockey rivalry in the two characters.
Oh, of course, Sabretooth would cheer for the Oilers.
Now, which of the creators? Because I see Roy Thomas and Len Wein.
Ween.
Yeah, which one was from which?
Whichever one's from Canada and whichever one was born in Calgary.
Okay, now Len Wein. Actually, the funny story is part of what made the Wolverine Canadian was Len Wein. I heard this story third or fourth hand, so I can't guarantee the authenticity of it, but he basically said to the editor back then, "I can write any dialect, I can write any accent." And they're like, "Okay, write a Canadian accent." And early on, that became a lot of bubs.
I mean, for the longest time, I was wondering why he called himself the old Canucklehead. And that when I was like 5 or 6, and I literally had not heard the word Canuck before. I didn't know that, the Canucks was a hockey team yet. So I always thought that was weird. And then, oh, Canucklehead, Canadian. That's cool. Actually, I don't think any of his creators are from Canada. Roy Thomas is from, let's see here, he's from Missouri. And Len Wein, as I look at the wikis here,
Then it
is from New NYC.
might be the creator of Sabretooth.
Yeah.
But the point is, like I said, is I heard that story is Len Wein basically wrote Wolverine's dialect based on a bet of I can write any dialect, and bub was how Len Wein thought Canadians talked or something.
There's a lot of
Yeah.
buds. There's not bubs.
Yeah.
I didn't know that Len Wein is a co-creator of the Human Target. Interesting.
Len Wein worked on lots of things. He also did lots of writing for
Well,
cartoons in the 90s.
yeah.
So anyways, that's our topic about our favorite origins and retcons to those origins. This is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Writing.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.